from here. Don't go away when you can take it from here. Why don't you stay and maybe join in the fun now the show has begun.
Yes, Dick Bentley and Jimmy Edwards will be on hand for the next 30 minutes with June Whitfield, Wallace Eaton, and the keynotes, all inviting you to...
Take it from here.
Well, it's true, I'm afraid, Jim. One of our scriptwriters is off sick.
Oh, dear.
He's got that bad throat that's going the rounds. You know, what's the word for it?
Is it that very long one?
No, it's the very dark one, the one without the moustache.
Oh.
What it means is, Jimmy, this week we have no script.
Oh, dear.
And, Jim, I mean, how are we going to cope? I mean, doing a sketch without a script. Well, it's like doing Macbeth without the Prince of Denmark.
Oh, Bentley, don't be so ignorant. Prince of Denmark? Is that chap Hamlet?
Oh.
He's in Othello.
Oh. What's he doing? Well, I still don't see how the show can go on. For one thing, how can Harry Rabinowitz direct the music without a script?
Well, Harry Rabinowitz will just have to conduct with a rolled-up union card, that's all.
All right, but what are we going to slosh Harry with when it's time for him to wake up and start the music?
Bentley, these pettifogging objections will get you nowhere. What we must do is to tackle the problem as though we were in the army.
Oh, foul language will get us nowhere.
No, I mean we must think constructively. I suppose I could fill up the half hour with 40 or 50 trombone solos. I mean, my trombone is always welcome.
Let's face it, Jimmy, your trombone is about as welcome as a German baby car in Coventry.
Well, we've got to do something. I mean, we...
Now, watcher, Jim Watcher, Mr. Bean.
Oh. Hello, Wall. Mm-hmm. What's that stack of waste paper you've got there?
Oh, this is some old take it for me scripts, Jim.
Oh?
I heard that you and Mr. B ain't got a script this week, so I brought these along, see?
Well, Wallace, are you seriously suggesting that Jim and I should dig out an old piece?
No, you got Jim Whitfield. You must have some sort of script.
So must you, by the sound of it. No, what? Bentley and I can keep the fun going indefinitely once we get started.
Yes.
We don't need a script.
No, we just spark off each other, make it up as we go along.
Yes, one spontaneous joke leads to another.
Go on, then. Let's hear you.
What?
Wait a minute.
Come on, spark off. Go on.
All right, then. Come on. Come on, Bentley. You start. When you begin to flag, I'll whip in with a funny.
Oh. Right, yes. Good evening. Good evening.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. there were three Irishmen called Pat and Mike. And, well... And this parrot...
Jim.
Well, fellow walked into a chemist's shop and asked the girl behind the
counter... No! No, me.
Well, you laughed at it.
No, well, I know that, you know.
Well, a girl walked in. Oh,
no, me.
Funny thing happened to me this morning.
Oh, dear.
It's no use. No. Wall,
Jim?
Hand me one of those old scripts.
No.
The top one, I think.
No, Jim, don't give in.
Well, this is our only way out, Bentley. The script, Wall, please.
Here you are, Jim.
Thank you. Now, will you please turn Harry Rabinowitz's head slightly this way?
Fine.
One, two...
What time is it?
I'm very happy and relieved to say it's time for the keynotes to sing.
I'm no millionaire, but I'm not the type to care. Cause
they've got a pocket full of dreams.
Got a pocket full of dreams. It's my universe, even with an empty purse. Cause
they've got a pocket full.
Got a pocket full of dreams. Wouldn't take the wealth on Wall Street for the treasures I possess. And I calculate I'm worth my weight in happiness. Lucky, lucky me, I can live in luxury. Cause
they've got a pocket full
of dreams.
Take the wealth on know.
Lucky, lucky me, I can live in luxury. Cause
they've got a pocket full
of dreams. A hole in my pocket, got my hat to have a socket. Without a little socket for the hole in my pocket, I'd lose a pocket full of dreams.
They lose a pocket full of dreams.
Yeah.
Thank you, keynotes. Good old keynotes. Thank you. Keynotes. Well, these 3 hours we've been into the chemist shop. And what?
Now, Jim, I've just been looking at this script you sloshed Harry Rabinovitz with. It's got some interesting patches.
I know. It's that oil Harry puts on his hair. Ode to Johannesburg.
Oh. No, I meant this historical piece we did.
Oh, yeah.
All about the private life of Henry VIII.
Show me that old script. Take it from here, March 1954. Hmm. Yeah, well, I suppose we might as well have a go at it.
Yeah. Well, you get your Henry VIII voice ready, and I'll wake Harry up for a bit of music.
Now what?
A little Tudor music, please. I was personal valet to King Henry VIII. Yes, throughout Henry's much married reign, I, Cornelius Culpepper, was filler of the royal hot water bottle. How well doth I recall the joyous occasion of King Hal's first marriage.
Gentlemen, I rise to say a royal ta on behalf of myself and my blushing bride, Catherine of Aragon. I'd like to thank her parents, Mr. and Mrs. Aragon. Or Mum and Dad, as I'm now going to call them, for giving me their lovely daughter.
Good old Katie.
Throw that drunk out!
Oh, no, Majesty, no, I'm just being happy.
All right, but I'm warning you, don't have any more Sir Thomas More.
Verily, it was a right, Mary Doo. But little did the guest realize that but a few years later, they would again be foregathering round a royal wedding cake.
And ladies and gentlemen, I would like to thank Mr. and Mrs. Irving Boleyn for giving me their lovely daughter Anne. She's so beautiful that I would fain offer a word of advice to my court. Never Anne Boleyn when I'm with Anne Boleyn.
But unfortunately, in 1536, there was I cutting bridge rolls again.
Go on, Edmund! Thank you! Thank you, chair, please. Chair, please. And give the artist a fair hearing. And ladies and gentlemen, I would like to thank Mr. and Mrs. Sid Seymour for giving me their lovely daughter, Jane. I think I have learned much from my past two marriages. And if I can't make this one last, then I am a Dutchman.
January the 6th, 1540.
On new Darman's own harem. Here I am looking down fondly at my beautiful bride, Anne of Cleavage. It is perhaps unfortunate my dear wife is known among the lads as the Flanders mare. I'm convinced she'll be the one to stay the course.
6 months later.
Well, the old grey mare, she ain't what she used to be. So, ladies and gentlemen, here we go again with Catherine Howard.
But on February 13th, 1542, down came the axe and up went the band. I must admit that by now the confetti was getting a little gritty.
Now, hold on. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm really glad to see so many of you still supporting these functions. Number 6 on your program, a little lady called Catherine Parr. About her, I can only say...
Henry, sit down.
But Catherine, I...
Sit down, Henry, and wipe that chicken fat off your beard.
My dear...
Henry,
I
am talking. As for the rest of you, you may well know that this is the last time you'll be called upon to cook up a set of fish knives. I am here to stay.
And in truth, she verily did, for she had a tongue like a whiplash. And so unattractive was she a person that the king did cause me to alter the royal do not disturb sign on his doorknob to read, please disturb as often as possible. As I dressed him one eve in Hampton Court, I remarked on the sorrowfulness of his countenance.
Yes, Salt Pepper, my good babe. I verily have copped a tartar this time. I would as lief not have married anybody. My oath, if I wouldn't feign as lief as not have. How looketh I in my robe?
Magnificent, magnificent, my liege. Plum-coloured sash, peach toque, damson pose, and cherry doublet.
Am I fetching?
Oh, my liege, a dollop of whipped cream on your nut and you'd be a knickerbocker glory.
Thank you, good Culpepper.
Not at all.
And it's all to be wasted on that hatchet-faced acid drop.
Henry!
That's the wire from the kitchen. I'm in the royal robing room, dearest wife.
Henry, I want to talk to you. Henry, I want a lady's maid.
Certainly, my dear. I'll get the architect to design one. I mean...
Somebody to help me tidy up my apartment. Place is a pigsty. Jane Seymour's hairpins everywhere. Catherine of Aragon's cleansing cream. Anne of Cleves powder all over the dressing table. And what is Anne Boleyn's bedroom slipper doing on top of the wardrobe?
Well, we were celebrating the capture of Calais, you know. It was a bit of a party. My dearest Catherine, I do not like to see thee so upset. Isn't there some way I can smooth those wrinkles from your brow?
I'll go and fetch the flat iron.
Who spake that?
I spake.
Well, don't spake till you're spiking too.
Look here, my dear. I mean...
Don't you raise your voice to me, Henry Tudor. And what is more, unless you change your ways, I'm warning you now, I'll lead you such a medieval life, you won't know whether you're on your head or your Tudor beam. So shove that in your hose and doublet.
She'll have to go. Cornelius, she'll have to go. Yes, Cindy, I think I have a plan. Cornelius, I must find a man who's minded to show his fealty towards me.
Me, your majesty, me. No man is more fealty-minded than me.
Faithful Cornelius, or Corny, as you have now earned the right to be called. Now listen to my plot. If I can discover a strange man in Catherine's boudoir, then I've got an excuse to silence her tongue at the neck. Now listen, Cornelius. Have you ever taken anything to Catherine?
Only a dislike.
Well, make a pretense of taking something to her boudoir, and once there, wax ardent.
What, with her? My leech, her figure looks like it hath been molded from fine clay. And dropped while it was still wet.
Well, don't look at her, then. I shall be concealed in the cupboard and will spring out at the appropriate moment.
What moment will that be?
Well, it depends how much the BBC will stand for. Now, it's all up with thee, Corny. Be in Catherine's apartment at 2 o'clock.
But, Culpepper, is this not a strange hour to bring me a cup of malted milk?
Nay. Nay, my lady. Oh, sweet Catherine, I am here to make love to you.
To me?
Yes, just as soon as I've drunk this malted milk.
Don't bother with that, Corny! Get on with that!
What was that?
Just a rat in the woodwork. Oh, Catherine, I loved you from the first. And now at this moment, you have never looked lovelier.
But we're in total darkness.
That's right. Oh, Catherine. Just cooling me malted milk. Catherine, Catherine, it is a knife in my heart to see thee married to that gross, fat, lumbering great bladder of lard. Oh, Catherine, let me wax ardent. To my arms, Catherine.
Now, Henry, now.
Oh, Cornelius.
Henry, now. Henry, quick.
Oh, Cornelius, let me kiss you again.
Henry, help.
Oh, Cornelius.
Henry, where are you? Oh, please.
More. Oh, let me.
Oh. Oh, Catherine, the rose without a thorn has turned out to be a rambler.
Henry. You said you were out dissolving a monastery.
I have the goods on me now. I understand this. One more nagging word out of you ever, and you'll go for a walk round the block.
The block?
The one with the ravens round it. Savvy?
Yes, my my liege. Yes, Henry, your majesty. Yes, dear. Yeah.
Success, success, your majesty. Shall I tell the executioner we shall not be needing the axe?
Not just now, Cornelius. There is still the little matter of that remark about a gross, fat, lumbering, great blood out of laugh.
I didn't mean it, your majesty. It was only bluff. King Hell. No.
Take him away, lad. Debond him. Chop his head off.
Where there's an Englishman, you'll find a cup of tea.
Where there's a Frenchman, there's a whiff of gay Paris.
Where there's a lot of snow,
you'll find an Eskimo.
And where there's you, there's always me.
Where there's a mouse about, you'll find a pussycat.
You puss.
Where there's a home, you'll find a welcome on the mat.
And when the hapcats meet, you find a boogie beat.
And where there's you, there's always me. Changes. You can't rearrange it.
It's just the way the world has been created. Mm-hmm. It's fated to be.
Where there's a cinema, you'll find an usherette.
Where there's a Romeo, you'll find a Juliet.
It's got to be this way, no matter what you say.
And where there's you, there's always me. Where there's a camel,
you will always find a hump. Where there's a kangaroo,
you're bound to get a jump.
Where there's a river now, there'll be a crocodile. And where there's you, there's always me. Where there's a teddy boy,
you'll find a teddy girl.
In every oyster,
if you're lucky,
there's a pearl.
Where there's a Jack and Jill, oh, you're sure to find a hill.
And where there's you, there's always me. It's really just a chemical reaction, this fatal attraction.
It's just the simple truth, you can't deny it. Just try it and see. Where there's a wedding, there's a nut that's being tied.
Where there's a honeymoon, there'll be a blushing bride.
There's not the slightest doubt, you'll soon be finding out.
Same again, please, Ted. Might as well have the other half.
Other half?
Other half gallon, yeah. My throat's terrible dry tonight, like a bit of desecrated coconut. Here, Ted, you know my boy Ron.
Well, that the lad with the Bill Haley kiss curl.
That's him, only it's not a kiss curl. It's the lining of his cap dangling, you know. Did I ever tell you about the time he decided to emigrate to Australia?
Yes, I seem to remember hearing the whole story, about 2 years ago.
Oh, that's a pity, isn't it?
Why?
Because you're going to hear it again. It all started one evening when Ron and F, that's Ron's intended, oh, yeah. They were sitting on the sofa in our front parlour. Ron suddenly burst out what he was going to emigrate. Just like that. It was like a dolt from the blue.
Oh, Ron. I can't think I'm so thunderstruck. But what a way to spring news like that. You turn round in the middle of a licorice allsort and tell me you're going to emigrate to Australia. Oh, Ron, do you know where Australia is?
No, eh? I looked for it on my globe of the world pencil sharpener. But it isn't there, eh?
Of course it is, Ron. Look, it's where the pencil goes in. Yes, right on the other side of the world, Ron. Oh, it's an enormous step.
I'm not going to walk there, eh? You go there on the sea. In the big ship, with portholes along the side. Like the one I drew in your sister's autograph book.
Yes.
Funnels and all.
Well, you've gone into it very thoroughly, haven't you?
Yes.
But, dearest, what on earth did the manager of the Labour Exchange say that made you think you should go to Australia?
He said, what Australia needs is men with drive, initiative and guts. But I'm going anyway.
Going to be my life with you gone. What a
thought it all out, eh? When I get out to Australia, I shall go into the bush and settle. Yes, after I've settled, you come out.
Ron, I must say, the idea scares me stiff. And I don't know what your father will say. You'd better break it to him now and get it over with.
Right, now. Dad! Dad!
What's up? Coming! Ron, I wish you wouldn't shout while I'm cutting your mother's corns. Now then, where's the iodine?
Oh, don't chide, Ron, Mr. Glum. He may not be with you much.
Eh?
Oh, you tell him, Ron.
Dad, I'm going to settle down where the pencil goes in.
You're going to... Hey, what?
Yeah.
He's going to emigrate to Australia, Mr. Glum.
What? Ron, you can't do that. Your mum's cooking the supper.
He's not going right now, Mr. Glum. Next Tuesday, he said. Oh, Mr. Glum, is he doing the right thing?
I don't know if I don't know. But I'll tell you this, Ron. I will say. Old England has still got a lot to offer. Long, look out the window, my baby boy. Everything you see out there is mine.
I thought the red ones were mum.
I'm not talking about the washing line, my boy. I'm talking about our heritage.
Sure.
Ron, you're my only son. Do you know what it's like in Australia? The heat, the kangaroos, the wandering tribes of unoriginals.
Well, it's no use, Dad. I'm going. I want to be a digger.
You hear that, yes? You hear what he said?
Yes.
It's in the blood, you see. That's his Uncle Charlie coming out in him. Uncle Charlie, he tried to be a digger. What happened? He kept going up in the middle of the prison exercise yard. Ron's Uncle Charlie all over again. Bags of initiative, but no sense of direction.
Oh, I don't care, Dad. I want to go.
Then my darling son, my baby child, my one and only piece of progeny, my only offshoot. All I can say to you is, go, man, go.
Well, Ron, dearest, only another 5 minutes and you'll be off on your way to the boat. I just can't take it in that you're going all the way to Australia.
Oh, I am, Eff. It says so on this label Dad's tied to my lapel. See, Ronald Glum, please put him off at Australia.
My empire builder. It may be years before we see each other again. Oh, write to me, Ron. Please write to me.
Righto, Eff. I'll get me pencil.
Not now, Ron. No, when we're apart. Oh, Ron, I'm just looking at you. Filling my eyes with you. I want something to remember you by.
Right, are we? We have to keep because there'll be a way.
Hello. Oh, Ron, never mind the bird in the hand. There'll be two in the bush. Well, come on, it's time to go, lad. I've loaded your luggage on the back of George's van, so off aboard. And don't sit on your Mac, because the marmalade sandwiches are in the pocket. And try and save the apple till Cape Town.
Righto, Dad.
Well, go on, ta-ta.
No, then, no, Mr. Glum, don't push him out like that. He's your only son. At least give him your blessing.
Yes, please, if I do seem a bit gruff, it's only because I'm trying to hold my feelings in. It's not an easy moment for a father who loves his baby son and... as dearly as I love my darling Ron, my own dear baby boy.
Well, Dad, I think...
Will you shut your big mouth while I'm talking to you?
But I'll miss the boat, Dad. Goodbye, Ed.
Oh, Ron.
Goodbye, Dad. I'll try to be worthy of the name Glum, and I'll keep on with the stewed prunes. Goodbye.
Oh, he's gone. Oh, Mr. Glum.
There. Cuddle up close to me, Eff. It's just as hard for me and his mum, because we're also... Oh, lummy.
What, Mr. Glum?
His mum. I promised to give her a shout so she could say goodbye to her only son. Mama! You know, I promised to give you a shout when Ron went. Well, he's gone.
Mr. Glum, I don't think you realise. We may not see Ron for years and years and years.
Come in.
What's wrong?
I forgot me cap.
You've got it on.
Ah, let me see it. Ah, so I have. Well, goodbye, Dad. I'll try to be worthy of the name at last.
You'll miss the boat. You're ever so late now.
Oh, well, goodbye, yeah. Thanks for finding me, Cap.
He's gone again. Oh, Mr. Glum, he's really gone this time.
I wouldn't bank on it. Let's have a butcher's through the window. Oh, yes, he is off. Look, you can see him in the back of the van, perched on top of the luggage. There he goes.
Is he waving?
No, he's eating his marmalade sandwiches. I told him to save up till he got on a boat. You got it. Oh. No use. He's disappeared round the corner. And his mum was up at 6 this morning cutting... Oh, lummy.
What, Mr. Glum?
His mum, oh dear. Mama! You know you missed saying goodbye to your dear son when he went. Well, you missed him again. Because he's gone again. Oh, F dear, come away from them curtains. Yearning won't bring him back. I don't know. It's got me now. The old place won't seem the same. Who's ringing up at this? That's the phone there. Hello.
Hello, Dad.
Ron, it's Ronnie. Come and have a listen.
Oh, hello. Hello, Ron. Oh, you are thoughtful. You phoning from your cabin?
No, Ed. I'm in the bone box round the corner.
But Ron, aren't you on your way to Australia?
No, Dad.
Why not?
I fell off the van.
Harry Rabinowitz and the BBC Review Orchestra bring our recorded show to a close. Those involved were Dick Bentley, Professor Jimmy Edwards, and June Whitfield, encouraged by Wallace Eaton and the Keynotes. Adrian Waller was the announcer, Frank Muir and Dennis Norton wrote the script, and the program was produced by Charles Maxwell. We all invite you to tune in again next week and...
Take it.